You're listening to Capstone News Now on WVUA FM 90.7, the Capstone, the voice of the University of Alabama. I'm Rich Robinson. Thanks for joining us on the program today. Still a lot more coming your way this afternoon, including some top headlines. Mike Hubbard, the Speaker of the Alabama House, State House, was arrested yesterday on 23 felony counts. We'll get to that in a minute. Also, Oscar Pistorius, the Blade Runner, famed disabled athlete who actually competed in the Able Body 2012 Summer Olympics, was convicted yesterday. Well, he was convicted already, but he was sentenced yesterday to 5 years in a South African prison for the murder of his girlfriend, Reva Steenkamp, a South African celebrity. But first, we have something a little different. Evan Hickenbotham, a junior majoring in psychology and also a transgender man is here in studio with us, as is Hannah Widener, a reporter for the Crimson White. The article that Hannah wrote with Francie Johnson came out last on the 7th, 6th of October, It was titled "The Person I Was Born to Be." That's out online on the Crimson White website. We're tweeting that as well. How are you, Evan and Hannah?
Doing good.
Doing well.
Really appreciate both of you for coming on. Forgive me, we're going to spend a lot of it talking to Evan, but first we'll start with you, Hannah, just to kind of get the ball rolling. This article, I think, was really interesting, kind of a long-form article, over 2,000 words, delving into not just Evan, but it has a few other folks that are in it as well, talking about what it's like being transgender on a college campus in the Deep South. Really an interesting concept, something that, you know, we haven't seen really written about here locally. Where did this idea come from, Hannah? I mean, where did it come about?
Francie and I started throwing it around this summer once the Time article that Laverne Cox, when she was on the cover of Time, we started asking the question, who else is transgender who goes to the University of Alabama? Now, the main reason I wanted to do it was more of a personal story. During high school, there was a girl who I knew growing up who, senior year, I remember the first day of class, she came in and went by a different name. Now, all of us didn't really understand what was going on, but for as many people who talked about it or had something to say about it, no one ever asked, I could say it now, Alex, what it was like transitioning in high school.
And sure,
I always regretted that, so talking to Francie, I said, you know, this is the chance to ask all the other Alexes at the University of Alabama what it's really like.
Evan, you're a junior here, majoring in psychology at the university. It's worth noting your path to UA is a little bit different than most, I would say. But you started out life as a woman. And then tell us kind of how transitioned. You were at least biologically born as a woman, whether you ever believed you were or not is a conversation we get into. But when did you first think about yourself in a way that was counter to what the rest of the world maybe thought about yourself?
I knew from a very early age, I would say probably 3 or so. I just knew that I was different. My brain did not function or really go along with the female side of what I was taught that I was supposed to be. And so, you know, at an early age, I thought I was going to grow up to be like my dad. And when I didn't, it really crushed me. I was like, what's going on? I didn't have a word for it until I had finished high school and went into college after my senior
year. So you knew at age 3 that you wanted to, you were supposed to be a boy.
Right.
But you didn't know what that was for, 13, 14 years?
Right.
I mean, what was that time like?
Miserable. In and out of mental institutions, a lot of medication, a lot of misdiagnosis, a lot of pain.
What did they say you had?
Oh, anything from bipolar to borderline personality disorder. You name it, I was diagnosed it. And it was difficult because I knew deep down inside that I wasn't crazy, that I wasn't, you know, I wasn't wrong, but I didn't know how to express that. I grew up in a family where we didn't that was not okay, and it's still not okay today. But I have chosen to step away from that family relationship because that's what I had to do in order to be who I am today.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second because I'm sure that's incredibly difficult and tough to talk about. But going back to your youth and kind of growing up, you had this idea deep down. Did you ever try to express it in terms of did you ever try to act upon it, or you were just it was a deep down conversation that you were having with yourself? What was it like?
No, I definitely expressed it. I was very much into sports. I was very much like, you know, Mom, I'm not gonna wear pink. I wanted my Husky jeans, you know, I wanted t-shirts, I wanted, you know, like I wanted to be the boy, and that's what I was. I went through a small period of time where I tried to be the most feminine girl that I could, and it was miserable. Like I tried to kill myself, and that's when I first ended up in mental institution, was because I was trying to be somebody I wasn't, and so that lasted about a year. But oh yeah, I expressed it and was very much, it's gonna be this way, but I didn't put words to it.
Sure.
Until later on.
And but then, did you ever think, I want to literally become a man? Or did you think, I just want to be as masculine as possible? Or,
no, I knew that I wanted to be a man.
Okay, it was that.
Yeah.
And you were telling your family this?
Right. I mean, I didn't start saying that until like 16 or 17, but we had numerous conversations about it. Like, I will transition, this is what will happen.
Yeah.
You will, you know, like, I'm going to be different. And they're like, no.
So they said no.
Yeah.
That was basically the extent of the conversations? Or?
Oh, no. It was, you're the most selfish, self-centered person that we know, and all you want to do is have everybody focused on you. And I was like, I just want to live my life. I just want to be me. That's all I want. It was very religious. That was stuffed down my throat. And, you know, I have a God of my understanding now. And
it was a Southern Baptist, or what was the religion, if I may ask?
Presbyterian.
Okay.
Now, I'm not to say that all religious people are like that, because they aren't. You know, I have people that I love and care for today that are religious people, and that's fine. They believe what they believe, but they don't shove down my throat what I should do with my life.
We're speaking to Evan Higginbotham and also Hannah Widener. Hannah's a Crimson White reporter, and Evan is a junior here at the University of Alabama, the subject of a front-page article in the Crimson White a couple weeks back titled "The Person I Was Born to Be." Now, Evan, you're 30 years old, 31 years old, and you're a junior at the university on your way to graduating relatively soon.
Right.
What was that time like? We've gotten up to, I guess, maybe your high school time, when your family is not accepting you. You're 16, 17 at this point. Your family is not accepting you. Are you rebelling and acting out against it? Are you running away from home? I guess you were put in a mental institution for a period of time. I guess before we get too far, what was that like? I mean, I can only imagine.
Like I was just being thrown away. Yeah, like I was being thrown away, and there was no...
They medicated you?
Yeah, there was no hope for me, is what I felt. And, you know, a lot of drugs, a lot of alcohol, a lot of, you know, a lot of rebellious behavior because I didn't know what else to do. I had internalized and you know, cut and done so many things to hurt myself. And that's what it became. It became an internal struggle rather than an external struggle.
Sure.
For me. I just internalized everything. You know, I'd had my stint with an eating disorder. I had, you know, where I had self-harm and...
Because it didn't seem like anything you were doing externally was causing any change.
Right. And I was getting in more trouble by, you know, externalizing it and being out there and being angry. And that wasn't working. I was just getting in more trouble. So I just turned it inward because I got in less trouble that way. Or at least in my mind, I thought I got in less trouble.
So how did you? What happened to your education when you were institutionalized? Did you still stay in school somehow? Or
I stayed in school, and I graduated with an advanced diploma from Tuscaloosa County High. I did actually really well. That was one thing that I did well in my first... A couple of semesters in college after I graduated were good, and then it just fell off. And
did you went to UA?
No, I went to Shelton State.
Okay. So you went to Shelton State, and this is, you were what, 19 at this time, 18, 19?
Yeah.
You go to Shelton State for a couple semesters, and what happens?
Drugs and alcohol took over, and that was just the most important thing to me was, you know, how do I deal with the inner turmoil that's going on? How do I deal with this stuff? And I turned to, you know, substances.
And how long did that, how long was that kind of the driving focus of your life?
Off and on for a long while. Let's see. I got clean in 2007 and stayed clean for 6 years. And then I had some other stuff come up in my life, and I turned to alcohol. But I've been clean and sober over 18 months now, and I'm working towards, you know, staying clean and sober, because that's what helps me to have the life that I do today and the opportunities.
You're a native of Tuscaloosa. You're from here.
Right.
So this is where you've lived your whole life.
My whole life.
And yet you're not talking to your family.
No. I talk to my grandmother. That's the only one I talk to.
But, I mean, I'm sure you run into them or see them every once in a while. I mean, what's that like?
I see them driving, but I don't run into them.
But what's that like when you see them driving down the street?
I mean, it hurts. I mean, my biological family can't accept me for who I am. It hurts, but I have family that's not blood that accepts me for who I am and gives me the support and the encouragement and the love that I have always desired, you know. Do I think about them? Yes. Would I love for them to be able to look at me as who I am and be like, you know what, I'm proud of my child? Yes.
Do you think that's ever going to be possible? Do you think you can ever reconcile with them? Or?
You know, I hope so, but I don't know. You know, and that's not for me to answer. I mean, that's not, I've done my part, you know.
Right.
And that's all I can do is my part.
We're speaking to Evan Higginbotham, a junior majoring in psychology here at the University of Alabama. So you come back to school. How'd you make that decision? Because you were out for a long time, over a decade. And first of all, what you were doing drugs. You had issues with that. Then you were clean for a while. You were working, I imagine. And then you decide to come back to school, and you come to the University of Alabama. Why did you decide to do that?
Actually, I started off at Shelton State again and transferred to the University of Alabama. I finally found a place to call home and felt safe and had the opportunity to come back to school. And I've always wanted to give back what was freely given to me in terms of, I want to help other trans people know that they're not alone in this journey. And that's my focal point of going to school is social work. That's what I eventually want to do, is get my master's in social work and, you know, do community organizing or public policy, because, you know, I want to work for change.
How many, if you had to estimate, I'm not sure if the university keeps numbers or not on how large the trans population is at UA. If you had to estimate, how large do you think it is? Anecdotally, I mean, people that you know or you know.
Well, I mean, their numbers go from 1 in 333 to 1 in 1,000, so.
Sure, it could be 50 people maybe?
Right.
So not a huge population.
Not a huge population, but enough of a population to where we deserve to be, to have a voice.
Do you feel you have that here at UA currently?
I think it's changing. I think the climate is changing, but I don't think that it's there yet.
Hannah Widener, your Crimson White reporter, part of your story, you looked at Title IX policy with the university and had an interesting, some interesting research in terms of Title IX and what the university has done to try to kind of extend this. What are some of the things that you found in terms of university policy that has either been altered or in the last few years? Because I know some of it's been done pretty recently, or other things.
We found that with Title IX, when we originally looked at it, and Evan had pointed this out to us too, that gender identity and, was it gender expression, or what was it?
Right.
Were not included within the harassment policy or the non-discrimination policy. Now, when we asked questions about it to the Title IX coordinator and originally put in our request, the policy still had not been changed. But this might just be us, or we just thought it, but 2 days later, we found out that the policy got changed after we had put in the request. And then when we asked the Title IX coordinator to answer our questions about when it was amended, because that should be documented when something like that is amended, she said, oh, it's always been included under the umbrella.
Okay, yeah. Sure. Okay. Well, that's very interesting. It's coincidental, to say the least, I guess. But basically what that does, I mean, what does it do? Because we're saying we're throwing these stuff, like we're throwing these titles, Title IX around. But what does it do in terms of protections or extra, not extra rights, but equal rights for people with various gender identities and things of that nature?
Well, it protects them from harassment. It keeps them underneath the policy. I mean, if you were to come to them with an issue, I don't know if they would be able to help you, but not as much as if you were included under the non-harassment policy. So